Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Around here there shall surely be, born to be strong,
raised to be free.
The old witch's face did not match her lusciously curved body. Midway up the neck, the firm, smooth throat became wrinkled chicken skin. There were warts on the beaked face and gray hairs that contrasted sharply with the smooth, nude body. She smelled bad, as if from 20 years of soaking in bird droppings. She stood in Professor Duval's study there before his desk, glaring at him. Professor Duval did not seem to be surprised or disturbed to find such a creature in his study. He looked up from his papers as if slightly bored. Duval admired her beauty, even beneath its accumulation of filth. Of course, he found other areas of her anatomy to be far more interesting than her face. His head bowed slightly, carefully repolishing his ever-polished horns. He was as pleased with her as was possible. What displeased him was her failure to conquer the dragon frame and bring him the Master Key Opal.
Zadie, I understand you lost your head.
You didn't come to my rescue. For 20 years, I nourished my strength and grew back my body. Now I'm back. I'm strong, and I want your attention.
Why, certainly, Zadie.
I want to go back. I want this time to conquer. I want your help.
Certainly, Zadie.
You didn't help me before. You allowed me to be defeated by those brats. 20 years in the dragon frame is a long time. 20 years of sheltering under a louse-infested bird's rump. 20 years gradually growing arms and legs and all the rest. Why, Professor, didn't you help me?
Because, my dear Zadie, that would have taught you nothing. You were to conquer. You were to bring me the opal. I provided the means. My participating in your revenge was not in our agreement. Remember that I am the teacher. You want to conquer? You must conquer. As before, I will provide you with the means. In return, of course, for compensation.
You mean...
Zadie gestured at her smooth body, warm and newly virginal. In this respect, they understood each other perfectly. Their words were mere games.
Of course. As you say, 20 years in the dragon frame is a long time. But you must not assume, my malignant friend, that I will depart from custom.
Why not? Doesn't Muva?
Oh, Zadie, Zadie, how little you know. And with all your centuries, Muvar only seemed to appear. The real Muvar is not a green dwarf. The real Muvar was not ignominiously defeated by that frame's inept magician. All was of a fabric, a pretense for the purpose of creating a legend and a hero to work to his final purpose.
And that purpose is?
Oh, Zadie, I was afraid you'd ask. I do not know. I have been who I am for too long. All I know is that neither Muvar nor I interfere directly. To do so would bring us into direct confrontation with each other, and that would be out of form.
That doesn't make sense to me. I interfere as much as I can.
That is because you are a tool instead of a prime mover. I am the one who must be indirect.
Then it's you against Muvar as much as malignant magic practitioners against benign magic practitioners? As much as Kelvin and prophecy against an otherwise established fate?
Your grasp is quite astonishing. It's only through Muvar's indirect interference that Kelvin's kind has triumphed as much as it has.
Then I wait your interference. Direct or indirect, there's no difference to me.
Ah, but there is, Zadie. Muvar and I are both too powerful ever to meet in open conflict. If we did, the contested world would be destroyed along with its inhabitants. Muvar and I, in mortal combat, would send frame after frame crashing.
Then you won't battle directly?
Not directly. It's like the game the humans play called chess. Muvar moves, and I move, but neither of us moves ourselves upon the board.
Chess, but with more pieces.
Exactly.
The beautiful young witch with the old face stared at the handsome horned professor from her roomy yellow eyes. Duval could imagine her thinking, turning over and over what she had only just learned.
Zadie, this time you'll win. When this is over, the goody-goodies will be gone. Your kind, my favorite kind, will throughout the dragon frame predominate. There will be no Kelvin Hackleberry left alive, and Muvar will have wasted centuries. Zadie, come to your professor. Come now, and we will dance.
You will give me your help, Professor.
All that is necessary. All that you will need to make Kelvin Knight Hackleberry's world a world ruled by malignant magic.
He grabbed her quickly to claim his reward.
Graphic Audio presents Kelvin of Rudd. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. Performed by David Coyne, Lily Beacon, Nanette Savard, Joel David Santner, Margie Tomras, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Yasmin Twazon, Matthew Bassett, Thomas Penny, Lily David, Bradley Smith, Nora Ashrati, Michael John Casey, Drew Copas, Kimberly Gilbert, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Barbara Pinolini, Colleen Casey, Scott McCormick, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Graybill, James Konacek, Sherry Berg, Liz Dimmer, Kelvin of Rudd, Book 5, Muvar's Magic.
Young Charles Knight sat contentedly on the riverbank, watching Glow disrobe for an early swim. Her curves were just perfect, and her face possessed a lovely, glowing countenance.
Glow is lovelier than she's ever been. It's been 20 years now.
Charles watched the water splash, the ripple rings form. 20 years ago, Glow had been an enchanted sword. Though but a child, Charles had disenchanted her with Helba's help. Their father, Kelvin, had saved his sister's life, and he, scared little Charles, had somehow found the courage to kick Zadie's severed head from off the high precipice. In his mind's eye, he saw it turning over and over, wailing as it fell. It was after that that he had performed the magic and brought Glow out of his dreams and into his life. 20 years later, and they still only planned their marriage.
And what are you doing? As if I don't know.
Charles turned to see Merlaine, his coppery-haired sister, emerge from the woods. A real beauty, she, and like himself, still unmarried. Being telepathic, Merlaine, Glow, and Charles shared an intimacy that was more than body and sometimes seemed more than mind. They had decided long ago that when Merlaine had found a suitable mate, the four of them would wed. Alas, finding another telepath, or even a non-telepath of the right quality, was taking time. But time was what he and his sister most had. The tiny bit of Chimera power that had allowed them to be born had, at the same time, given them all indefinitely extended lifetimes.
You know quite well. Did you find Horus?
No, but I think I know where he's gone. Darn dragon, you'd think that he could wait.
Dragons are dragons.
Charles and Merlaine were not twins. They were two of triplets, and the third was the dragon Horus. Without the Chimera's intervention, they would have been a Chimera. A woman's head, a man's head, and a dragon's head on one giant Scorpio crab body, complete with a long copper sting. Though separate, They were closer than triplets because of an incidental legacy of the Chimera, telepathy.
Do you think we should call him before he's out of range?
Merlaine meant with their minds, of course, for Horus had the same mental power. Horus was keeper of the magical opal and overking of the Alliance. Unlike normal dragons, Horus had copper scales instead of gold. The three of them had been affectionate friends and playmates all their lives, but spring was spring and the dragon was the carrier of an ancient urge. The same urge Charles had when he gazed at naked Glow and so became vulnerable to his sister's teasing.
No, we shouldn't bother him.
But he might get in trouble. He's never been with other dragons. He won't know how to behave.
That's why he's going. We both know that he's smarter than any other dragons he'll find. He needs to find his own kind, as do you.
Merlaine frowned, seemingly from distaste. She plunked down on their favorite boulder.
At least he's got dragon territory to go to. Sometimes I wish there was a telepath territory.
If only. We've already searched everywhere. Even Helba was no help.
Yet Charles felt that somewhere there had to be some male deserving of and deserved by his sister.
Oh, there you are!
Glow came up to see Charles and Merlaine dripping wet in all her beauty. She was oblivious of her nudity, except when her brattling charges Kildim and Kildee were around. Glow's was an enormous responsibility. Kildim and Kildee were kings who aged only 1 year for a normal human's 4. The extended childhood was supposed to make for expanded learning, but the terrible twins rarely displayed that. In their case, it seemed to mean expanded time for mischief. Now, an apparent 12 years old, never mind that they were in their mid-30s in actual years, they were curious boys slowly developing into arrogant men. The lovely girl put on her underclothes and her neatly starched white nanny dress. Then she joined them.
Kildim, Kildee, and Helba have some business with your parents. That's why I have the day off. We might as well just enjoy the spring while they spend the day and talk.
I can't imagine those brats discussing anything seriously. Mom and Dad, perhaps.
Well, they are. Your granddad and grandma will be with them. I don't know what it's about. It's certainly Helba doing it.
Most likely it's to do with Zadie. Helba has always insisted she'd be coming back. 20 years ago, Dad struck her head off and I kicked it off the cliff. Then you, Merlaine, claimed you saw an Egok carrying it.
I did. And the proof of that is that the head was never recovered. Helba thinks there's some counter magic that prevented her finding it.
Most likely the Egok dropped it. You two believe what you want, but I don't think she's coming back.
They might believe him wrong, but it was too nice a day to be bickering with your very best friends. Besides, had either of them looked into his mind, Charles knew they would have gleaned his uncertainty. The big, gray-haired, gray-bearded man with a gnarled face definitely had round ears. He sat there in Charles Lomax's wine and chess house, sipping a short mug of dark red. He was toying with a king chess piece while joking it up with Dance-Eye Nelly, the serving maid all men swore had to have the biggest jugs in town.
That him?
The tall, bronzed man had the mark of an adventurer. He nodded now at the table as Charlie had expected him to. Charlie wiped to the bar where the noon patrons had spilt. He prided himself on reading types. This man was the sort he had soldiered with when he was young and idolized the man at the table.
I'm Charlie Lomax. I own this place. Introduce yourself and I might tell you.
I'm Dak. Tim Dak. I've been poking around dragon territory looking for scale.
Dangerous business. You there long?
Charlie gripped Dak's firm, rough hand in his decidedly pudgier one. It had been a long time since he had been soldiering.
Better than half a year.
Will you bring back a lot of scale?
Nah, they shed them, but I didn't find many. Mostly I escaped with my life.
Ooh, that's a good practice, yeah. You were asking earlier about that gentleman over there.
He's not John Knight, Kelvin's father, is he?
No, he's Kelvin's father-in-law, Sean Riley, commonly known as St. Helens.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Dex seemed about to walk over to St. Helen's table.
Well, I'm waiting till she comes back. He's still got a temper. He might think it's her you want to see.
Oh, you!
St. Helen's had made a slap at Nellie's seating arrangement. When she got back to the bar, the tips of her pointed ears were red.
Oh, that man! If he doesn't quit joking me, he'll be the death of me!
And more likely the life of you if he has his lecherous way.
I tell you what, Dank, I'll introduce ya, but you'll have to buy a round of wine for him.
Fair enough.
Dak was halfway across the room in long strides before Charlie caught up with him. St. Helens looked up from the chessboard, probably wondering if this were an autograph seeker or some scribe intent on getting an article.
St. Helens, this is Tim Dak. He says he's a man back fresh from dragon territory.
St. Helens nodded, looked first at Dak's pointed ears. Four times in recent years, men had come in who were descendants of John Knight's company from Earth. Without exception, they had wanted to meet someone who had known their father. He held out his hand, and they shook.
Dak wants to talk with you, and he asked me if I'd sit in. He's buying a round of red when Nell gets back.
Dak pulled out a chair, and Charlie took the empty chair to the side. St. Helens waited, toying with the chess piece. He and his business partner, Philip Blasmore, one-time king of the former Kingdom of Aratex, had made money on the game they had introduced. Everyone knew about St. Helens' business, and most knew his history. St. Helens, as many people had discovered, generally liked to talk.
General Riley.
St. Helens.
St. Helens. I've read and heard about your exploits all my life. I know how you and John Knight and a company of Round Ears, all soldiers from some place called Earth, arrived in our world by magic. You and he and the other Round Ears...
Army unit. And it wasn't magic, or at least my old commander John Knight always claimed it wasn't. Science, he always said it was, as if it made any difference. I used to agree with him because he was the commander, but... these days, I sort of lean to the majority.
You think, then, that it was magic?
St. Helens nodded, then looked away as from a painful subject.
So, you want to hear my story?
Yes, sir.
Well, sir, I was born on Earth, a world like this, except that on Earth there was no magic to run things, none at all. Instead, we had science, and with that, we accomplished things that here are accomplished by magic. I was in the North American Army along with my commander, then Captain John Knight. I volunteered, as did the rest who were with us. We want 12 volunteers. Riley, you've just volunteered. The big deal on this assignment was to test a clean atomic missile. That meant it only killed people and did nothing disastrous like poisoning valuable territory. We weren't supposed to have been hit, but somehow we were. The missile came in low, and we all threw ourselves flat on the ground.
On and on St. Helens went, telling his familiar story. Charlie never got tired of hearing his old friend's tale. He thought that if it hadn't been for St. Helens' business of making chessmen and boards, none of the work actually done by himself, of course, or Philip Blastmore, he could have made money lecturing. Nellie brought a fresh jug of wine and put it down by the chessboard and joined the trio at the table.
And so there the kid was, stuck with his prophecy. And John in the Red Queen's prison, and me in the Aratex palace with a very young Philip. Kelvin wasn't a sort to believe in prophecy, but thanks to his father, he had the ears, and now he had the gauntlet. Well, after the kid whipped the big guardsman in the public park, there was no doubt in anyone's mind that he was genuine. All this time, John, his pointed-eared little sister, and let me tell you, she was a pretty good man with that sling of hers, was in that terrible auction place. My own dear daughter Helm was there, too, and...
Inevitably, the long story reached its satisfying end. Dak, like many a listener before him, was enthralled. Nellie, though she knew the big round ear well, had the look of full hero worship and the eye gleam that said how much she could love him. For long moments, they simply sat, each of them aglow in their separate ways.
So, is that enough for you, young fella? And fill in the gaps?
Dak wiped his mouth, making a purple streak on his sleeve. Like most adventurers, Dak's table manners weren't the best.
St. Helens, sir, I... wouldn't have interrupted you for all the loose scales and dragon territory. I could never top your experiences or equal them. But I've had a recent experience.
Say on, young fellow.
Well, sir, I've heard from childhood about how young Kelvin killed a dragon when he was still a boy, then used the golden scales to buy an army. It was my favorite story. And since adventure looked to be far more interesting than work, I thought if I could find enough dragon scales...
Work would thereafter be no problem. So after I inherited my father's horse, his sword, and a few gold coins, I set off for Dragon Territory. And so, I lay trapped beneath the big tree branch as the two dragons fought over which would eat me. I gave up all thoughts of becoming rich or even living to return home. And then, suddenly, there was this strange head sensation. It made me think of the way I felt after several mugs of wine. And yet, at the same time, it was as though something was sharing my thoughts. I looked up, past the two dragons, and there, coming out of the forest, was a third dragon.
God help us!
What did you do?
I could do nothing. But then, I saw this body on the body of the new dragon. It was a human man, very dirty, with long, yellow, almost golden hair. He rode there, between the two tiny wings. All he did was sit there, on that smaller dragon. He just sat there, and he thought to me.
Thought to you? It would seem to me, young fellow, that the time for thinking was past.
Ordinarily, yes. But what he did at first was think to the fighters that they should quit fighting and go. And you know what? Those battle-scarred old veterans, both of them streaming blood, did just as he and I wanted. They turned tail and lumbered off. And that left just the smaller dragon, the thinker, and myself.
Move out on a picnic!
The man stood there, atop the dragon, squarely between the wings, St. Helens. He was as tall as you, with muscles to match his sense of balance. When he stood up, it was just like he grew right up out of the spine of the dragon. He fixed me with a stare. Then that dragon came close, and I started screaming and cursing, but instead of the dragon eating me, it lifted the branch and let me free. The blonde man didn't say anything. He just pointed back the way I had come, back out of the mountains, back out of dragon territory. I knew what he meant, as surely as if he had spoken. I went. Believe me, I went. And I didn't even bother to retrieve my sword, or to pick up the bloody scales. All I wanted was to get home.
And now you're home, and here you're thinking you'd like to know more about that man. Can't say I blame you. I'd like to know more myself.
I'll bet he was a sorcerer, like Zatanas. He controlled dragons for a time, though through sympathetic magic. I don't recall he ever rode around on one.
I don't think he was a magician. Sounds more like a wild man with extra brain power, like Helm's kids, maybe. If he could think into your head and the dragon's heads, he had a power.
I'll say he had a power. You should have seen those dragons get.
I would have liked to. I wish I could have been there.
I'm going back. I'm going to find out. St. Helens, can you go with me? There's no one better to lead an expedition. No one I'd rather have in charge.
I'd like nothing better, young fellow. Even though I'm not as young as I once was, but... And the fact is, I have a responsibility here. According to the good witch Helba, old Zadie is going to come back. I don't know that I believe her, and I don't know that I don't. My son-in-law still has some prophecy to fulfill, and maybe Zadie will make him fulfill it. God knows I couldn't talk sense into him. But the point is, if there's trouble, I may have to put on a uniform again.
You really think there may be trouble?
I'll tell you, young fella. I'm almost, but not quite sure of it.
Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, St. Helens.
Dax stood up, said his goodbyes, shook hands all around. It had been a long, pleasant afternoon of storytelling. Kelvin Knight Hackleberry sat his middle-aged self down in the comfortable chair between his mother and father. It seemed strange to him to be in one of the twin palaces with them, Helba, and the Twins Terrible, as Merlane and Charles called them. The young scamps were slicked up with their official robes on and brightly polished crowns on their red heads. Even Katba, Helba's familiar, shone blacker than usual.
As you know, it's been 20 years. That's how long it should have taken for Zadie to grow a new body on her head. As you also know, my magician, warlock, and witch friends and I have searched. The head has not been located, and that means a powerful protective spell was placed on it. Zadie has an ally who wants her back.
Kelvin tried to look impressed.